Hillary just reminded me of a couple things that I really should mention. One is currently there's SB 420 cleanup language that's pending before the legislature. The cleanup language, what it would do is it would abolish the or qualified patient language in the part that talks about the quantities. If this legislation passes, you would have to get the voluntary ID card in order to qualify for the whatever the minimum established by either SB 420 or your local. Or your
every year
have
the,
to get the voluntary
it's
card.
Every year the right? So you have to redo that one.
And on the other hand, if you get the if you volunteer to get the card, unless you have a doctor's note saying that you need more than that amount that's been established either by your locality or the state, if there hasn't been a higher one established by the locality, then you are not in compliance with law. So if you're growing 20 plants but you have an ID card, then you're in trouble with the law. And that the cleanup legislation is actually, it's not changing what Vasconcellos' intent was. That was his intent, to basically set up a two-tiered system so that the card would be like a contract with the state. Like, in order for me not to be harassed by police, I'm agreeing to these guidelines. And it's not that every patient needs to have an ID to be a legal patient, but that was his idea.
So you should keep your ears peeled for that, or keep your eyes peeled for that, because if that does pass, then, you know, the part I said about you don't have to get an ID card to have the protections obviously goes out the window. The one other thing that Hillary reminded me of is that SB 420 does some weird things, and I didn't get into all the details. You can take, at the end there's like a whole big outline of how to defend a medical marijuana case, which is why we pass out to public defenders. It's on our website. You're welcome to take a copy. But it hopefully, you know, it tries to provide kind of at least a legal outline of each of the things I talked about here, but in greater detail. Whether it's intelligible to someone who's not a lawyer, I don't know. I'd like to think it is. But
we also have a one-page description written by Chris Conrad of what SB 420 means. It might be a little easier to read.
As he's not a lawyer. But if you want like a specific, but in any case, it's certainly all available for you. It hopefully answers questions. SB 420, one of the things SB 420 does is it creates this kind of strange definition of a primary caregiver, which is, it says a primary caregiver may serve multiple patients so long as they all reside in the same county. If a patient resides out of the county, you can only service one patient. And so this could create trouble for any one of you, let's say, who has more than one patient that you provide marijuana to, and any of those patients live outside the county. So you're probably on better grounds if they all live in the county. I should also mention, having said that, though, that there's a little legal gimmick involved in all of this stuff, which is one of the things I don't really want to tell prosecutors, at least up front, but they'll learn it soon enough, I suppose. But that's, technically, SB 420 cannot modify or restrict or amend Prop 215. As a voter-approved initiative, the legislature does not have the power to modify or amend it. So to the extent SB 420 narrows the language of Prop 215, it's invalid. So I actually think this part about the primary caregiver thing will be ultimately found to be invalid because it's a restriction that Prop 215 doesn't actually contain. The beauty of this argument is I feel slightly hypocritical, but so is life sometimes as a lawyer, but is that where SB 420 does something positive, where it actually extends the protections of Prop 215, for instance, extending it to cooperatives or extending it to distribution as well as to transportation, we like to think of it as not amending or in any way modifying Prop 215, but rather what it does is it amends the earlier legislatively approved laws against marijuana cultivation or possession or sales or whatever it is. And the legislature is certainly allowed to amend their own laws. So to the extent SB 420 does positive things, it's valid. To the extent it does negative things, it's invalid.
Is that something that's going to the courts?
We'll see.
Where SB 420 would be changed or wiped out?
Exactly. I mean, we'll see the challenges. I mean, the thing is, SB 420 is rather new. And so we haven't seen any, there's no published decisions dealing with SB 420 yet. And that's part of why that's exactly why I was hired, actually. I was hired by ASA. I joined ASA about 5 or 6 months ago. In large part just because of SB 420, it's so complicated, and it allowed me a chance to spend, you know, a long time actually trying to figure out exactly what the law was in relation to to what courts had been deciding, and then get that information out in the best positive way that we can to public defenders and other lawyers throughout the state, so that they make these arguments, so that we get the courts to decide in our favor on these issues. But ultimately, yes, it's going to be an issue in cases, and hopefully we'll do the right thing.
Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz has a law which kind of restricts, for example, distribution centers, and actually, at least in the eyes of some of the previous people who worked for those centers, closed them down. We've had no distribution centers in Santa Cruz for 4 years. Have you found in your experience there's a problem with localities adding restrictions that make it difficult for people to get access to medical marijuana?
What exactly do you mean? I mean, what type of restrictions are you talking about? Are they
zoning restrictions, area restrictions?
Use permit restrictions,
yeah.
I haven't seen it a whole lot. I mean, I Oakland just did something interesting, which is, or in their process of doing it, which is the same deal. It's what they did was they decided that they would give exactly 4 licenses to dispensaries in the city. So at least they're not shutting them down. On the other hand, they're narrowing it to 4. And they're doing that through zoning ordinances. There's certainly the possibility of localities doing that, but we actually haven't seen. I mean, unfortunately, we're seeing it the other way, which is simply they bust you, as opposed to trying to do it through a zoning ordinance. And so, I mean, that's all. But I don't have a lot of experience on that. So.
I was wondering about does the federal law ever going to change with medical marijuana being in the category of cocaine and heroin? Come down like from
schedule
1 to rescheduling to like 2 or 3.
You tell me.
I mean, what's
not for lack of trying.
I'm really shocked and appalled that it's up there in that category.
Right. I mean, and it's up there in that category for 2 reasons. It's not just because they deny that there's any medical use of marijuana. It's also there's the 2 criteria. And when you schedule, there are the 5 schedules. There are 2 criteria. 1 criteria is no currently accepted medical use. And to qualify as Schedule 1, that means they have to find there's no currently accepted medical use. The other criteria, which is the one I think is even more offensive than all this, quite frankly, well, they're both offensive, is the relative abuse potential. Which is what you do is you simply look at all the 5, you look at all controlled substances, and you look at and you rank them in terms of abuse potential. And the DEA actually, in the last rescheduling petition, which was denied in 2001, the DEA actually admitted that marijuana is not toxic, doesn't kill a single person, and it's not physically addictive, which distinguishes it from nicotine, from alcohol, from cocaine, from heroin, from all the big boys. But despite having made these 2 findings, which is the 2 you would look to in terms of how abusive a substance is, they nevertheless said it still falls in the highest category above opiates and above amphetamines. Both of which are physically addictive and toxic. And their reasoning, which is as thin as it gets, the reasoning was it's because marijuana has the most number of users. Since there's no such thing as a valid use of marijuana, all of those users are abusers. And for that reason, they say marijuana must be maintained as a Schedule 1 substance because it has the most number of abusers. And that means that's the highest abuse potential.
So we all stopped using it.
So they're basically hanging their whole
exactly
right. The medical use.
They're doing both.
Back of that.
Just sit like up all night to figure it out.
but given this complete intellectual dishonesty that the DEA is always going to employ, and, I mean, the reasons are obvious and I think understandable at some level. I mean, medical marijuana in particular it reveals in the most. I think in the strongest light, the flaws in the government's general approach to drugs and the flaws in the drug war. Not only are they willing to put people away for 10 years for cultivating to provide the patients, but they simply have turned a blind eye to all of the people who have suffered and continue to suffer because they're being deprived of medicine, which permits them to eat or permits them to suffer less pain, permits them to get off of morphine or Demerol and other things that do terrible damage to their system. And it is being revealed greater and greater, to a greater and greater extent, to the general public, and the federal government can't let their iron grip go, because once they let their iron grip go in the context of medical marijuana, I think people are going to realize the emperor wears no clothes in the context of marijuana more generally, and other drugs as well. and that it's a wrong-headed approach to put people in jail for long periods of time to try to curtail a consensual voluntary activity. And so I expect the DEA will continue to fight. I do not expect the DEA will do this in any way voluntarily. There is another marijuana rescheduling petition that's been filed. Hopefully by that time, you will have numerous controlled scientific studies that will substantiate the claim that marijuana has medical use. On the other hand, I wouldn't put it past the DEA to refuse to schedule marijuana, no matter what evidence is presented.
How's your public defender's meeting today?
Good, but sparsely, somewhat sparsely attended. We only had 11 PDs.
How many are there?
It's not bad compared to the number. I actually don't know the numbers. But
somewhere in the range of 40.
Okay, so it's not too bad. Apparently, the guy who runs the thing is on vacation. They ordinarily do it on Thursdays, which also threw a little, you know, probably had a few people confused.
Next time you have to try the whole criminal defense bar. That takes in the public defense.
I'm sorry, this was actually the whole criminal defense bar. This was the monthly meeting of criminal defense.
So it's not just.
So unfortunately, I mean, so. My understanding is there was 9 PDs and then two members of the criminal defense bar more broadly. But we've been getting, that's a low figure compared to what we had gotten in other counties. The high at this point is we had 65 in LA. So the word is, I mean, we've cleared 100 at this point. We had 20 in, roughly 20 in Fresno, 20 in Riverside.
Good population, though.
Yeah, exactly. So It's going well, and you know, people don't really even have to listen to what I have to say as long as they get these, which they've been getting, and we are getting some calls from people, other lawyers, PDs, who I think now have taken a greater interest. I mean, they it's just, the trouble is that, I don't know, by a show of hands, I mean, how many people in this room does 30 plants have meaning to? I mean, when you hear 30 plants, does that give you, do you have some idea whether that's a high figure or low figure? Most patients know what that means. Most prosecutors, judges, and defense lawyers don't know what that means. 30 plants has no meaning to them. They don't know how much that will yield. They don't know. And the most value I think from what the public defender trainings are is to re-educate them, because too many people approach this from the perspective of recreational marijuana users. And I certainly was guilty of this as well up until fairly recently, which is, you know, recreational marijuana users smoke, they get high, and they use very small quantities relatively of marijuana because it's expensive and because they're not using it as medicine. They're using it only in evenings or only on weekends, whereas patients use marijuana frequently around the clock and develop a tolerance in terms of the stoned factor and have a greater access to it because it's legal for them to cultivate it. And when you eat it, it takes 3 to 5 times as much frequently to get to the desired effect, or if you use it in tinctures or that sort of thing. So it takes a whole re-education of public defenders and prosecutors and judges in order to get them to kind of reconceptualize 30 plants. I mean, as you said, it's, you think of it as a low figure. Pretty much any prosecutor out there would say it's a high figure. I would certainly think it's a defensible case, but that's the difference. It's going into these things, public defenders certainly down in the South think of 30 plants as an indefensible case, and hopefully they leave thinking of it as a defensible case.
Yeah, if we're talking about access to the patients, this county thing about caretaking, so it wouldn't be reasonable then to, if you really wanted to worry about guidelines, to grow for a patient that was in a county that had a 10 plant limit, to grow 10 plants for them wherever you were.
The problem is that based on that language of SB 420, there's going to be a problem of, it's worded in a funny way, which strongly suggests that they intend to restrict it so that you can't be a primary caregiver of someone in a different county. And so that's the problem. I mean, otherwise, and I think they're doing it on purpose because they're allowing the local counties to opt out.
Quite information on that. It, also in that cleanup legislation, so-called cleanup legislation, they're going to change that county thing to include a certain distance, like 6 in the county or within 50 miles or 20 miles. I can't remember the number, but so it'll be a little more flexible, but it still won't allow for vendors from Humboldt to supply dispensaries in the area.
I wanted to say that's my dilemma. I'm a patient, a caregiver, and a provider, but I have to travel out of the county. I have to travel several counties to get my product, and and I'm only able to deal with a very small amount of people, so I hear stories all the time of people taking the Greyhound bus to Hayward or to Oakland. So I'm in a position, I would like to see our county get, you know, have guidelines, open a distribution center. But I wanted to ask you something for my own personal safety. Because I do travel up to either Humboldt or Mendocino, and I have the approval of the district attorney, the sheriff, and the police, they know what I'm doing, and they have just told me, don't make a circus of town, don't bring attention to yourself, and we won't bother you. So they've allowed me to exist, but I get emails from people that say things to me like, why do they allow you to exist, but they don't allow this, and then I go, well, oh shit, I don't know. You know, I don't know. So I'm ready to, and I'm anxious to see this county have the guidelines, do something about having a distribution center, because I can only deal and help so many people, and I want to shop locally. It's never going to be free. I know how much my grower has to spend, or my growers that I go see, I know how much it costs. He put the whole, you know, because every time with the price, back and forth. So I know that it's an expensive proposition, it's a risky proposition, and growers are entitled to their money. And I provide an in-home delivery and support service to people. I'm using my education. So I think that's why the DA, sheriff, and the police have seen me as maybe more legitimate, because I go to people's homes and I spend time with them, and I charge a very fair price. I guarantee the product is organic and mold free. I want the county to develop things like that right here, and feel guilty and ashamed that people that live here are taking the bus and risking going up to Oakland, which is very dangerous. Whenever I go to Oakland myself, or I know several of the people that run the operations up there, I always have somebody walk into my vehicle. And I'm from New York, and I just have a sense of where it's okay to kind of be and where it's not okay. I feel okay here, but at the same time, law enforcement doesn't protect you.
Well, I certainly would like to see it too. Who knows exactly when it'll come to play. I mean, the problem is that under the current law, even in the state of California, I'm not just talking about a federal prosecution, which is you know, potentially at risk anytime you're selling it. Even under California law, arguably.
See, I don't see it as selling it. I don't like that word. Yeah. I provide it. I am providing a service. I don't want to be. See, language to me is important, and I think that's been part of the issue. I'm not selling it. I'm providing a service that people need and appreciate. And
reimbursement.
Right.
I don't know what the word is. I don't know about the language. I don't know how to say it. I just need to know that I'm not a property owner. Most people I know don't own property. They live in apartments. They live in housing authority properties, Section 8 properties. They're afraid to grow because they have inspections every year. They don't have the expertise to grow because they have to be a scientist, basically, to grow medicine.
The only reason why I say sales is simply that the courts, in terms of that Commerce Clause issue with the federal government, the courts, it's the idea is that anytime there's an exchange of money for product, it's commerce. And so that's the only reason why I say sales. So anytime there's that exchange of money for product, you run the risk of a federal prosecution. Whereas if you do it completely for free,
but I can pay $165 for my ad there at Hayler. They don't mind me paying $165 for one description.
Right, or you can use Marinol, whatever the case may be. But there is something that you mentioned that's very important. There's something called an entrapment by estoppel defense, which is even if none of this qualifies you as a primary caregiver, even if the fact you're doing in-home delivery and all that stuff, which I think may well qualify you as a primary caregiver, if the local county agents, if the people that be, if the cops or the local government tells you that what you're doing is okay and we will not prosecute, that will then provide you a defense in court if it ever came down to a state prosecution.
But they said, but we can protect you from the feds, and they left it at that. But I was home invaded and I was robbed, and they kind of seemed a little pleased. So, you know what I mean? They're not protecting me. And I want my police to protect and serve me. Mm-hmm. I want my county to provide safety for me and the clients I've come to care about. So that's why I'm glad that so many people here. I hope people don't leave before we get names and numbers and things like that, because I'd really like to see something get done. People are very apathetic in this county because we have it very good. But I come from New York and I have a very good frame of reference.
Well, I will say that Anita and Andrea and Neil and I met earlier, and they're all interested in helping to connect people in Santa Cruz into some kind of political, into the ASA campaign, basically. And so if that is something that you would like to do, please, maybe Anita, maybe you can gather names of people.
Well, I just did.
Oh, but that was for the guidelines. And so yeah, this is, it may be the same thing, it may be different. If you could just share that with Anita.
The way I look at it, Hillary, is that anybody, when I send out emails, any of the things relating to Americans for Safe Access would be sent out, and anything regarding the guidelines would be sent out.
Oh, okay. All right.
Same people.
Would you care to speculate on how the SB 420 guidelines that allow for compensation to caregivers might, interact with the federal laws, specifically with the ruling taking away their jurisdiction?
Well,
would that open the door to federal jurisdiction again?
I love speculating on everything, but I'm afraid so. And we certainly don't know at this point how it's going to play out. I don't know, I would guess about 50-50 is my guess on which way the court will rule. But
and is the Ridge case going to the Supreme Court?
The Ridge case is, the Supreme Court has, I don't know, it's another couple of weeks to decide whether they're going to take it. It's been, the federal government has appealed it to the Supreme Court. It's a matter of whether the feds will take it. We have mixed feelings on whether we want, it all depends on whether Bush wins or loses, whether we want them to take the case. It's going to get worse, obviously, if Bush wins. The question is that next step? You now have WHAM being essentially immune from federal prosecution, but WHAM doesn't have that quid pro quo exchange. They do it by contributions.
Yeah, advice would be to just avoid any kind of monetary.
Yeah, I could tell you. Yeah, I guess. I mean, the only thing I can tell
sort
you.
Sort of keeps you. In,
I mean, what I'm saying is, I think it's 50-50, which I think is optimistic that the court will extend Rage to the context of sales. To be perfectly honest, it's probably lower than that. In any case, you're going to run the risk, the law is subject to change at any time. Anytime you're actually having that quid pro quo exchange, if it's marijuana for money, you do run the risk of federal prosecution.
What about further services or goods? Like barter.
Same thing.
I think what I'd like to do now is close the meeting, and we have this room till 8, so it's not much longer. And then if people individually want to talk to us, we'll be available for a little bit longer. But I would like to say that this literature that's here is only useful if it gets out. So if you have contact with a group of patients, please take multiple copies and get it out to people. There's also some general brochures on ASA and what we do, and we're trying to go through a membership drive now and get more small support from the community. So please take those brochures, take the patients union ones, take the condition-based booklets and the legal stuff, and thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.